I remember a day when I was in second grade. I attended a private Catholic school in the city. When I entered the classroom, all of the boys were looking out the window, none of the girls. At least that's what I thought, until the nun called me back and all of them to their seats. And I noticed on the window's ledge sat a deer's leg. My throat tightened. I immediately felt unsettled thinking about Bambi's mother. The nun explained that today there would be a show and tell that would include that deer leg. This was the first time that I had ever experienced a show and tell. I'm just wondering how many of us have offered a show and tell in our lives in school? Quite a few of us. The education community believes that the activity of show and tell is really important for our children because it gives them the opportunity to learn to speak and to listen, learn how to be an audience and introduce themselves, learn how to ask inquiry-based questions, learn to make connections between student responses, anticipate, observe, practice critical reasoning skills, practice storytelling, learn same and different, use vocabulary, use descriptive language, say thank you, increase confidence. How many people were afraid when they first did their show and tell? Yeah, it's scary to get up and speak in front of people. And even if they're your peers, it's kind of scary. You feel vulnerable. It takes a lot to make that type of exchange of stories happen because people are so afraid. And a lot of times they're afraid of being judged or fear of getting up there and forgetting what to say or concerned about oversharing, an act that can leave one feeling vulnerable and distant instead of connected. Our story for all ages was a story about show and tell, really. Chris and our adult and child participants shared a story that was based on a theme for this worship service. The lesson bolsters the ideals of what we are considering. Stories and mythology offer us an opportunity to engage that creative part of our minds, to draw understanding from someone else's life lessons. It is an easy way to learn without risk, per se, to listen to someone else tell their story. Today's story was about a wise frog sage and a courageous little fish who had his world broadened beyond his little pond by a big bird. What might be the lesson held within that story for adults? Because this is a story for all ages. Any guesses about what this nut, the gem of the story was? Alex?
For me, it was about there's truth outside my own little pond as well.
Yeah. Sure. Coming out of our comfort zone. Anyone else? So for me, the use of stories and storytelling is a brilliant way in which to engage us, even as adults, because there are many lessons that are held within each story, and they can be different for every single person. What I find fascinating is that what we most need to connect to is usually what we uncover in any given story or sermon. It's funny, after worship some Sundays, people come up and say, oh, this was the most poignant thing for me. And then the next person will say, oh, no, it was this. This was the most poignant thing for me. So in each story we listen to, different people may pick up different things. The lesson that compels me for this morning story for all ages is that the world may be just a bit bigger and more diverse than we have been taught. That it's possible to have our lives broadened through our courage and willingness to be open to another's experience, another's knowledge. There was also a see it to believe it kind of message as well. You gotta see it to believe it. The story of the little fish in the pond reminds me of another sage, Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha. Born a prince, he lived his life protected by his father the king, surrounded by beauty and anything that he could have ever wanted. Who would want to leave such luxury? Yet Siddhartha felt that there was more to life than he had been led to believe in his isolated life. He felt called to step outside of the royal home and life to know more about the reality outside of court. He left the palace, wandered the world, seeing, learning, experiencing. What he realized, as humankind practiced it, life is filled with suffering, aging, and ultimately death. Disillusioned or maybe motivated by what he saw and believing that there was a way beyond the visible constraints of his life, he decided to look beyond our condition to enlightenment. He wanted to realize the essence of what it is, to understand and cultivate his own essence. So he practiced many ways in which to reach enlightenment. Being unsuccessful with each, he continued on. Exhausted, he decided to sit in repose under the Bodhi tree until he was either enlightened or dead. In his meditation, he faced torments and fear, and ultimately he realized that having lived at both extremes, in great wealth and physically impoverished, that the most significant way to find enlightenment was through the middle way. Upon gaining moments of enlightenment, he decided to teach anyone interested how to meditate, to step outside our human condition and suffering, if even only for a few moments. The Buddha was one of the most prolific sages of his time, having shared many sutras or teachings with countless people. His teachings were passed down through the ages and are still revered today. As the Buddha grew older, he endeavored to distill his expansive teachings into the essence of their truth, which some might say made them much more esoteric in nature. I'm particularly called to the Heart Sutra, one of his last teachings, and which is only one page in length. The Heart Sutra is believed to be the essence of life. It is explained by the Bodhisattva, the practitioners, that to understand a sutra, one must go beyond the intellect alone. Although analysis is helpful, practitioners also keep the words of the sutras in their hearts, that understanding unfolds through practice. Opening the mind and the heart is the beginning of the practice. A portion of the Heart Sutra explains that the liberation, and stick with me here, the liberation of all beings revolves around the liberation of the bodhisattva from the concept of being. Because no individual being comes into existence, neither does a being cease to exist. Because there is no cessation, there is no impermanence. Because there's no impermanence, there is no suffering. Because there is no suffering, there is no path to liberation from suffering. No wisdom, no attainment of wisdom. Thoroughly perceiving this is supreme, perfect enlightenment. Winds, doesn't it? It sort of unfolds the mind and then folds it back up. The Buddha believed that one should cultivate their essence, which is who we really are. Let go. Be blank. A blank slate. Open-hearted. Open-minded. If we do not have to prove, hold on to and defend our beliefs and knowledge, there will be less suffering, less frustration, and war. If there is no ending to our being, only transformation, what is there to fear? There is so much to unpack in the Heart Sutra to keep people practicing and debating for millennia, and humankind has. Many of the world's religions have similar teachings and practices that offer understanding about this condition of life. The Torah, the Rig Veda, the Bhagavad Gita, the New Testament, the Final Testament of Islam, to name only a few. Most of these important teachings are wrapped in story, myth, or esoterica, and are defended sometimes to the death. I think of the infighting that the Islam faith has faced, dividing itself into two warring factions, the Shias and the Sunnis. Both groups hold the same religious tenets. The differences between them initially stem not from spiritual differences, but political ones. I have never met a radicalized Unitarian Universalist. But we are not all that different. We have our beliefs that we fight for and that we defend. And what do we believe? There's so much that we believe. It does seem like there is an expansive breadth of belief that our movement ascribes to. But we have a focus. Our canon is comprised of seven basic tenets known as our principles that call us to stand on the side of love. How many of us have really taken the time to unpack and understand the implications of our principles beyond a cursory read? What do our principles encourage us to stand for? Love, justice, equality, peace. We Unitarian Universalists are known as the standing on the side of love people. Our beliefs are all about action, as we are called to and expected to show up and speak out against injustice and in support of equal rights. Right there, that's our show and tell as Unitarian Universalists. Show up and speak out. Throughout history, we have stood and still stand with signs. We make pink hats with little ears and wear bright yellow t-shirts. We march and lobby our political leaders. We do so much in this world for so many. A close friend recently gave me her take on First Parish of Sudbury from the outside, which is a really great perspective sometimes to get. As far as a religious community, First Parish does more outreach than any other that I have seen. How about closer to home? If one of us is hurt or in distress, you better believe that we reach out. We bring meals, offer rides, help in as many ways as one might imagine. As long as we know that you're in need, we will be there. Reach out, we will reach back. We're people who walk or roll our talk. I have a few questions for you this morning. And please be honest with yourself when you raise your hands. How many of you are uncomfortable with the word spiritual? How many of you believe that you are on a journey, spiritual or not? How many of you shared your beliefs with one another, spiritual or not, here during your time at First Parish? How many of you wish that you could share what you believe, but do not because you feel like you might be judged? Interesting that our First Parish mission calls us as spiritual seekers. Our UU guidelines are spelled out in our principles and sources. Largely, most Unitarian Universalists are familiar with the principles, but do not know them by heart. Many remember only the first and seventh principles. Anyone want to give it a shot? What's our first principle? Say it again.
Inherent worth and dignity of every individual.
Right on. Affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And our seventh, anybody know our seventh, Peg?
You're part of the interdependent web of
being. Yep. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. I remember when I first read our principles, I immediately thought that I could live with these more than I could the Nicene Creed by far. But I never dug deep enough to realize the consequences held within these commitments. The Reverend Meg Barnhouse, in an article that she wrote for the UU World magazine, offered a suggestion that I resonated with. She wrote, "Let's stick something on the end of every principle that will stop people from smiling and nodding comfortably as they are read. Instead of adding in the bathtub or between the sheets, how about attaching beginning in our homes and congregations?" Interesting idea. What principles hold us accountable to one another? I turn to the third principle that calls us to acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Boom, there it is, spiritual growth. We have covenanted and have responsibility to go there with one another. At first blush, it sounds good, fairly innocuous, but let's unpack it a bit. Beginning with the first word, acceptance, which is defined as the act of taking or receiving something offered and or a favorable reception, approval, show and tell in its most basic form. We begin our third UU principle with the word acceptance, not merely tolerance, disregard, or disdain, acceptance. It's not easy to commit to acceptance. It takes work on our part to step beyond our own beliefs, to be listening and opening to another's. Here's the interesting piece of this part of the principle. To really do this exchange of something offered and received, we must be open to having our minds and our hearts touched and changed. If we are not open, then we're just listening politely, waiting for our turn to speak. How many people have done that in their lifetimes? Yeah, I'm raising my hand. Show and tell expects us to go beyond the polite and to really learn something, be changed by another story. The second important aspect in this principle is to encourage, defined as to inspire with courage, spirit, or confidence. Not only do we covenant as Unitarian Universalists to accept, we commit to each other and to encourage one another towards their call to spiritual growth, even if it flies in the face of our own beliefs. We're committed to encouraging someone in whichever way they find they want to travel. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. And it's truly a lifelong, moment-by-moment practice of being present to one another. And in taking Reverend Meg's advice, we offer to do this at home and in our congregations. Personally, I think my friend is right, that we're doing really well out there in the world. Maybe this work is easier and safer with strangers than it is with one another. In understanding our third principle a bit better, how many of us believe that we give our all to this endeavor? I have lamented over this principle since becoming a Unitarian Universalist. How do we engage with one another and do this well? Unless one is in a small group, also known as a covenant group, my guess is that we are not taking time to go deeper with one another. Do we share what is in our heart of hearts with one another? Would you like to? Personally, I'd like us to mindfully practice what is known as the triple jewel of Buddhism. Since we are Unitarian Universalists and First Parish members and friends, I'd like to change this practice a little bit and call it the triple jewel of First Parish. That triple jewel contains three things. The Buddha is the guide. The Dharma, or teachings, are the path. The Sangha, or congregation, are the teachers and companions along the way. We need all three aspects to make the journey wholeheartedly. The Buddha, in my humble opinion, is that small, still voice within. The Dharma are the teachings known in our principles and sources. How many of you know our sources or our UU Dharma? It's a little less known. These are them. We live our principles within a living, evolving tradition of wisdom and spirituality drawn from sources as diverse as science, poetry, scripture, and personal experience. There are six sources our congregations affirm and promote. Direct experience of the transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to the renewal of spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. 2, words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. 3, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspire us in our ethical and spiritual life. 4, Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. 5, humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. 6, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred cycle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Whew, that's a lot to take in. I have a handout for each one of you to take and to take for friends if you want to. That helps us on our journey, that's right there in your wallet, that can call you back to being your better you self. The third part of the first parish jewel is the Sangha, the community. That is our congregation. The difference is we see each other as teachers and companions along the way. Lao Tzu, the sage of Taoism, is quoted in the back of our gray hymnal. He teaches that peace in the world begins with peace in the home, which begins with peace in the heart. If one starts with their own heart, the demands of our principles get heavier. Peace and compassion in my heart, justice too, freedom as well, affirming the worth of every person all the time, not only with my words and my behavior, but in my secret heart. What resides within our secret hearts? Are we willing to share, to be open to transformation? What a gift to commit to being a part of First Parish's Sangha for this journey of life, to be truly connected, to be truly known. The first step is to understand, honor, and practice our third UU principle, to show up, to speak out, and to encourage us to spiritual growth. Or not spiritual growth, maybe just growth for growth's sake. My friends, we are born, we live, we learn, and hopefully we are transformed by our spirit, our experiences, if we are lucky, if we are mindful, if we are open. But in the end, we all die. The Buddha's story could have been so different if he wasn't willing to be open to facing the realities of this life and to the stories and experiences of others. He chose to know, and in knowing, he practiced. And through his practice, he gained a very elusive path to enlightenment. In the end, at 80 years old, his body died of food poisoning. Choose what you want for your life and encourage that bodhisattva desperate to become a Buddha that we each hold within us. The bodhisattva who so desperately wants to courageously step out of that palace of protection into this life, to embrace and learn from one another, to be affected and changed, but not to be judged. Begin right now. Get to know one another. Trust, be vulnerable, reveal yourself, no shame. Be a teacher and a student, transform. Some of us meditate together, some do yoga together, read books and engage in conversation, but how do we support one another with regard to our spiritual well-being? What about that small, still voice, that brave bodhisattva within us that it takes a lifetime to grow? Some know that piece of themselves as their soul. It is the essence of who we are. I believe that is what the Buddha spent a lifetime doing, cultivating his essence. I believe that it is our essence that we take with us when our bodies die, and we open up to an unfettered journey beyond the little pond. Let us truly accept one another, to be curious about one another, share our stories, and be accepting and courageous enough to embrace the First Parish Triple Jewel together. Let us take a moment in silent meditation. For this we pray, may it be so. Amen.